Incoming pitch, spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing, 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Welcome back to the Launch Angle Podcast. This is Rob D, the Deadpool Hitter. You can catch me on X at Deadpool Hitter. I'll be bringing in Rob Silver, Jeff Zimmerman very shortly, where will we be talking about some recent news and trade action, including the signing of Josh Hader, Rolvis Chapman, Robert Stevenson, and we'll be going over some ADP players in recent NFBC Draft Champion Draft, Mitch Garver, Jose Clerk, Nolan Gorman, Shane Boz. We get into a little bit of the recent discoveries on the NFFC and how we feel about that, and get right into the action. And anyone who wants to come sign up for the Pull Hitter Patreon, come check it out. It's my pinned tweet on X at Deadpool Hitter, and you can also go to patreon.com and put Pull Hitter Fantasy in the search bar, and it'll take you right over there and see what I got going on for the season. Draft recap, player breakdowns, extra launch angles, all that fun stuff. Here's to the episode with Rob and Jeff. Cheers.
Here's the pitch.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm Rob D., the Deadpool Hitter. I'm here with Rob Silver, Jeff Zimmerman on this Thursday, January 25th, full moon tonight, which means the lunar calendar is shaking up the world, literally our world especially. Guys, how are you doing today?
It's fine. I think as we talked earlier, it's like I think all of us had like relaxing plans 12 hours ago, and those plans all went to hell.
Yeah, chaos. I know you can blame the moon for that, Rob, so let's run with that.
I am blaming it. So, yeah, as we learned yesterday, there's been a little bit of a situation in the NFFC, NFBC's football side, and there was some stuff involving a player colluding with someone who works for the company, and not good. It took some really sharp members of the fantasy football community to catch this. Guys who were playing in a postseason tournament that kind of, you know, need to be paying attention to other people's rosters more than so season long because of the ability of that contest to move ahead and behind guys with weekly moves on, you know, how the, it's just a crazy rule list for the NFFC postseason. So that hangs over our head today a little bit. And we're just trying to piece together the pieces, wait for them to do a thorough investigation of everything. And, you know, hopefully we can be more at ease going forward than where we stand now. But how do you guys, feel about it?
I think with me, though, one issue, and I think it sat wrong with Rob also, was one of the wordings, like everything came out, they said stuff's been corrected, but they're like, and there's no other issues. And it's like, there is no way in the time that they found that they could verify that there was no other issues. So I think that that was kind of, because it looks bad if you do find any more or if someone else finds another one. I mean, anyone that's been involved with the person, the competitor, is probably going to go back and look in their leagues and see what it is. And if they find one, any kind of discrepancy, it's going to come forward. So I think the NFBC is, they've done everything right except for that one. I think it's just like, well, as far as we know, there's nothing else. But, you know, I think that no one really knows right now if there was more or how widespread. Hopefully it was just a one-off deal, but no one knows right now.
Yeah, and I'll start all my comments by saying I really like Greg. I trust Greg. I think Greg is has nothing but integrity, and that I will still be playing the NFBC. So nothing that I'm about to say changes either of those facts. I don't think they've done everything right other than that one thing. I think they've done this is really, really, really bad. And it's also in the first like 12 hours now. We're recording 10 a.m. On Thursday. So 14 hours, whatever it is, a textbook on how not to do crisis communications. It really is. So they need help. And I hope they get help because I want them to get through this and to survive. Me and my friends have this line, and it's kind of morbid, so I'll say it publicly. Please don't judge me for it. It's like, you know, what are the odds the one time I had a dead hobo in the trunk of my car, the police would pull me over and give me a speeding ticket? It's like you never get caught just the one time. Dudes who get caught doing bad things almost always, sometimes it was just a one-off, but almost always you didn't get caught the first time, you didn't get caught the third time, you didn't get caught the seventh time. So you thought to yourself, huh, I guess I can just drive around with dead hobos in my car and they're never going to catch me until they do. So I don't know that. I have no fucking idea if this was a one-off. I don't know if he had 12 other friends that he was helping. I'd like to think this was a one-time really bad decision that he made and it's inexplicable and he feels awful about it and all the rest of it. But I have no idea. And there's no reason to think that it was a one-time deal. Why? Just because what happened that one day that he just decided to help this guy? So there needs to be a thorough investigation, not just on this one guy's teams and whether Derek was screwing around with it, but the integrity of all the contests. Like that, if you're doing crisis communications, you need to wildly overreact. If you're a processed meat company and they catch one case of listeriosis or like spoiled meat that you were selling, you don't get to say, I think we only sold one package of bad meat, so we've pulled that one package of bad meat, but we're pretty confident all the rest of the meat that we're selling is good. You need to recall all your meat. You need to investigate why there was listeriosis in the meats. You need to go through all the processes to make sure it never happens again. You need to send refunds to moms who are serving their kids the processed meats if you ever want them to trust the meat again. So it's a big problem. It's also a big problem. And again, I like Greg a ton. I like the NFBC. It's a big part of my life. But Derek was a problem long before this. Like anyways, I don't want to rant. It was a big problem, Derek. And that Greg allowed him to just continue the way that he did, apparently. I have a big problem with it. I could not reach out to Derek. Like, he was not somebody who if I had a problem with a team, felt I could reach out to at all. At all. And at a company with only three employees, when one of the three employees is off limits, that's a problem. I have a problem with the pricing structure of the NFBC and the discounts that they give to friends and family from some people that other people don't get. That's a problem when a lot of people are playing high stakes fantasy. It's their business. They have a right to do it. But I have a problem. Like there are lots of issues here that go beyond this. And what it comes down to, and I think this is the core cultural problem, is they're running this like a family grocery in a lot of ways, and there's suddenly a lot of money at stake. And again, I trust Greg. I don't think Greg would ever screw around. But you can't run a business with this much money and this much potential for fraud like a family grocery. The previous cases in season-long fantasy have all the problems have been about the integrity of the money. When I send somebody a check for $1,000 or $100,000, is that money still going to be there at the end of the season to pay out prizes? They've gone to extraordinary lengths to ensure that risk was taken off the table. As it turns out, and that's good. That's really important. And people who are newer to the industry can't just shrug and say, well, of course the money is safe, because it hasn't been with other companies. It's a big problem. Has been a big problem. So it's great that they've dealt with that. But as it turns out, they needed to spend a lot more time also ensuring the integrity of the games are actually placed, because it's part and parcel to what we're sending money for. And so it's a big problem, and I hope they get through it. I really do, because it would be a fucking shame if they don't, because you can't just replicate this and recreate this. So I hope they get through it.
Yeah, I hope they get through it too. I share the same sentiment about Greg and, you know, just the kind of character he is, the kind of guy he is. Just finished reading that Ron Chandler book that we got at FPAS for attending it. And it's just, you know, just to like really read and learn more about the history of the game. I knew some of it, but to really get into some personal stories and deep stuff, it's like what Greg did from the start, just to even try to make baseball fantasy baseball thing, you know, That's why I'll give him my support. You know, I sent him an email last night just to let him know that I'm there for him. And yeah, there may be some things that, like you mentioned, that he could have done a little better in terms of the character flaws and the decision-making there, if he was aware of some of the things that we were so aware of, for sure. But, you know, I'm still going to be playing. I'm still doing my draft champions. I can't stop doing those. You know, I'll give them the full support until, you know, everything comes through. I think where everyone's really has a right to be reacting how they are and having a lot of questions. And, you know, I know he just recently, some of his posts, I think, are coming from the heart, which is basically what he stands on. But some of the wording, too, is, you know, kind of cringy. And I get that. So there's a lot of things at play here. So I hope they can get it resolved and it could come through that, you know, it's just a one off thing. I know he did mention in a recent post that the situation at hand, like the software that allowed that to happen, is only used for like keeper league teams or something like that. If someone missed a deadline, it's like something, it's a software that doesn't get used for the regular transactions in season long.
Except Rob, if I drop somebody in Fab in the main event by mistake, they can undo that transaction, and they do undo that transaction all the time. They're very open about it. If I bid on somebody by mistake, so I bid on the two guys, same name, and I bid on the wrong guy, $700, tough shit. And I respect that. But for whatever reason, the decision has been made. If I clearly didn't mean to drop Ronald Acuna, they will allow me to undo that transaction. I don't know how they always decide who is an appropriate undrop. I don't know if everybody has access to that, but clearly they have the ability to undo transactions, and which tells me that's not quite the case. If they can do that, if they can undo my Ronald Acuna drop, what else does the software allow them to do? Where is there a log of all of these things? Yeah. Maybe there is. I don't know. But
that's right. Maybe there is. Maybe it's going, like, maybe they're looking at all those things now.
Yeah. So I don't want to like cast aspersions. I don't know that there's any other shenanigans. I don't know if there's any shenanigans in the baseball space. I'd like to think that there isn't, that everything that's taken place is above board, but it's not a just trust us at this point, even if we do all trust Greg, because he doesn't know. That's the point. That's what I think Jeff's point was off the top. Absolutely. If he didn't know that Derek was doing this, he has no way to know what else Derek was doing. He doesn't know what other dead hobos were in Derek's trunk, to take my awful analogy.
I'm just glad to get to hear the word hobos over and over today.
Yeah, usually to be clear, when my friends use it, we don't use the word hobo. It's something even more offensive, but I won't use that publicly.
All right, let's get in some recent signings around the baseball world. Mr. Josh Hader finally found a home, and it's with the Houston Astros. Guess it threw a lot of people for a little loop there. Wasn't really what we were speculating on. Had a lot of different domino effects. So, Jeff, what's the biggest domino effects for you, I guess, with the Hader signing? It could be guys on his team. It could be players on other teams as well that you may feel stronger about now that he can't sign with those teams. What do you got for me?
I think the main thing is the other teams, especially with him and Chapman. I think they were like the biggest names left that there was like, there might be somewhere. It's like, if you go to the White Sox, we'll talk about someone later. It's like, they could become the closer there. But basically, all the closers are now kind of off the board. So I think that the one thing is like everyone else can move up that was kind of like, oh, are they going to bring someone in? And I think like Jose Leclerc is an example with Texas is like, well, could they brought Hader in? Possibly. Could he have gone back to San Diego? They probably weren't going to take the money there and do it. Or was he heading to New York? Or was he going to go to Boston? Or was he – even the Mets could have – like, we didn't know where he was going. But I think with these two signings, I think almost all the closers seem to be locked up, and we can just I think you'll see some of those iffy ones that they thought Hader was going to go to jump. As for the exact situation in Houston, I think it's going to be pretty close. The weird thing is Hader and Presley have almost, and even Abreu, all have like the same talent.
Yeah.
Their projected ERAs are between 3.26 and 3.39, according to Steamer. So it's like, could it be, is it Presley's job? Is he just going to keep it? I think this is one where you really just need to read quotes from the team. I would stay away from anyone like the beat reporters. Like, this is one where I think going in the season, you just really need to go dig and find out what the team's saying, how the team's using them. And you can kind of guess here. I'm kind of worried it's going to be one of these cases where there's going to be one person that's like 100% sure Hader's going to be it, another person that's going to be 100% sure, 90% sure Presley's going to be it. So they're both just going to get overvalued. So it might be one where you just have to stay away, or maybe just take Abreu late. I don't think it's going to be Abreu. I think he's going to be like one that will have to fill in. I think it'll be one of the other two, but it might be a case where both of them just end up getting overvalued, and I probably wouldn't end up with either one.
So where would you take Presley right now, like in a drafting hole? Like, where would you feel comfortable in saying, like, what if this guy remains, or what if he gets 10 to 12 or whatever, you know? Like, where would you feel comfortable, if you were to feel comfortable, if you had to pick a number to say, if, you know, you're on the clock and you say, all right, I think this may be a shot to take right here.
I think it was kind of, I think Mr. Silver brought it up when we talked about, like, Alvarado last week, where it's kind of like after round 10, like, you know, you're going to get 10 to 15 and that's good. Like, you don't have, there's no chance for Fab. So 10 to 15 is good. And you're just going to have to get another 10 to 15 guy. I could see someone doubling it up. That wouldn't be the worst, like having another closer and then those two together in your bullpen. That would, I mean, the ratio is going to be great. You can just go with that. But no, I think somewhere after the 10th round, probably in the middle teens is where he should go, but I think he'll go higher.
I mean, we can talk about, I know your answer, Rob, because I've been listening to your podcasts lately, that Leclerc, who we'll talk about maybe in the ADP section, was the big winner. I'm going to go a little bit stronger than Jeff. I think the big loser in this is Hader. Like, it's a great signing, obviously, for Houston in real life. But Hader's, like, I looked at the online championship ADP only because I know for a fact those drafts both started and ended after the Hader signing. And he's the first closer off the board. And I think when I combine, do I like Hader for this year? Of course, I still like Hader for this year. But when I combine the situation where it's not binary, I think, I just think that it's very, it's eminently foreseeable that 12 to 15 times they just decide to bring in Hader in the seventh or eighth inning because the 1-2-3 hitters or the 2-3-4 hitters are coming up for the team they're facing because they know they have Presley and Abreu for the last innings. And Hader with 35 saves and Hader with 20 saves or 25 saves are just two different players. Yeah. If I'm taking the first closer off the board, and when I combine that with Hader's walk issues, and like, it's not I am not shitting on Hader, but if he was like super dominant lockdown Hader and there was some murkiness on the roll, I could see you like there was lots of times in Milwaukee, so it's not like he hasn't faced this situation previously, but if he was super dominant last year and projections thought he was super dominant, then I could see, like, whatever, Rob, Hader with 25 saves and crazy whips and crazy ERA and crazy strikeout numbers is still awesome. But there's enough chinks in the armor that combined with Presley and Abreu, like, he's a pretty easy fade for me as the first closer. If that's where his ADP is, they're just guys, I'd rather have Diaz. Like, I'd rather Diaz coming off injury than Hader straight up right now. Like, that's pretty easy to me as a call, assuming Diaz is fine in spring training.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. There is definitely some hesitancy toward Hader now. I drafted him in my Champions League in draft champions.
I don't want to overstate it, Rob. Like he's going to be plenty. He's going to be plenty fucking good. Like I'm good, not. It's not like it's not like you have Presley. If you have Presley, I think you could have a bag of shit right now if you drafted him in a DC.
Yeah, and I think I think that your main point is 35 saves to 20 saves is a big deal. You know, that's why there's closers that go between 45 and 60, and then there's ones that go between 80 and 110. That's the difference, and a lot of those players are just the volume of save because a lot of the skills are the same, and that's what we want. You know, those top guys for 35, 30 saves, like that magic number. And yeah, there's probably going to be some speculation. It's going to be interesting. It just adds another twist. I already was drafting Diaz before Hader, regardless. I know it's the knee injury and it's nothing arm related for him. I feel confident he's going to come back and be throwing fireball, but this definitely puts Hader down just a little bit. And then it becomes a chicken game too. Like, well, when do I draft him? Like, you know, you're up against the clock and you got a guy like him and David Bednar or Jordan Romano, like, you know, where are you going to go? You know? But I think it makes it probably easier to just not make that pick and just go with a guy who has the role for sure. But it's also hard to, I don't know. It's really hard to think that Josh Hader is not going to be closing these games out for the most part, but
I don't want people to say like, because I could easily take him as the third, fourth closer and be very happy with him. It's just more risk now, and I don't want risk 100%. At his cost. I don't want that level of risk.
And they're both really, like, all three of them are really good versus lefties. It's not like they need Hader to be a lefty guy. Presley and Abreu mow down lefties as well. I thought too. I was like looking at Abreu and I was like, like maybe this might expand his ability to work even longer, like a, you know, more, you know, one plus inning stints. He only had 5 of those last season. I thought he would be more of a guy who might be able to reach like a 90 innings pitch thing if he was, you know, able to bridge it from anyone having a disaster start to those guys. But I don't know. It makes for a fairly interesting situation. Presley, in one of my current draft champions, he went 250. So, definitely could be a value there. I mean, if he does get, I don't know, like Jeff, you were saying, like if you think it's going to be kind of like a split or maybe even him, that's going to be huge. And then my current draft at 225, he hasn't been drafted yet. So it'll be interesting to see how that keeps up. This is always the interesting point when it happened and then you're waiting for these ADPs. And like you said, Bob, you look at the online championship where it's just, you know, it just went off after that happened and doesn't really reflect, I think, what's going to happen, you know? All right, so let's move on to Robert Stevenson of the Los Angeles Angels. He signed a 1-year deal, $10 million. And Carlos Estevez, the incumbent closer there, 31 saves last season. Stevenson clearly was better skill-wise last season. He was one of the best relievers in baseball skill-wise. So, Jeff, how do you see this shaking out? And again, just like the domino effects of ADP and where to take them and not.
From what I've read and from a couple things, I think Estevez is going to get the first chance to keep his job, and he'll have it until he fails. And then Stevenson, or even Moore, depending on how Moore's doing, like they just signed him, then someone else will go in. I mean, I think a lot of people were even speculating on Ben Joyce coming back and being competitive. Mm-hmm. So it's actually like the one thing with the signing of Moore and Stevenson is I sort of like their pitchers a little bit more. Like it was kind of a crappy bullpen until both of them signed.
Good point.
And now it's like they just have to make it. If they can make it 6 innings or if they can find another one, just be able to go 5, you might be able to get a few more wins with the Angels, kind of pull like the Royals did that one year and they won the World Series, where it was just like, if you have a lead after 5 innings, the game's over. I mean, they don't have that great of relievers, but they're pretty damn good. So I kind of like their starters a lot more right now. And I think, like I said, yeah, Stevenson might be one where I don't know if I'm going to count on him He sounds like one, if I'm like in an OC, I pick him up at the end of the round, end of the draft, and just plan on dropping him. Like, he's not someone I'm going to count on. He'll be a bench pick for me.
It's interesting in the last three online championships. So since the comment came out, I think the timing works here that Estevez gets the first shot, kind of GM talk. His min pick in three was 169. His max is 313. That's a big friggin' range. And I think that's, that may stick in terms of that range, unless there's real news in spring training, in the sense that, if you're betting on skills, like Stevenson is the pretty easy bet. If you're betting on, I just want saves, and I don't want Stevenson, especially in a 12 team, sitting on my bench hoping that the skills win out. So I'll just take crappy Estevez, or not, or just avoid the situation entirely and let it play out. Isn't crazy. Poor Vlad, my buddy. God. What was the pick number that Vlad took Stevenson at? Like pick 80 or like early?
No. It wasn't that early. I think it was 107 ish, 117 maybe. I don't know. Something in that range.
Anyways, Vlad is an awesome player. And
of course,
I think he acknowledges he may have been a little bit aggressive with that decision. I'm not sure that the Royals bullpen is an apt analogy. Like Stevenson's good, but like some of these guys, when they leave the Rays, don't hold their gains. Ben Joyce is an interesting arm, but call me when he walks less than 10% of guys. Like, it's and I'm not sure Estevez is all that good. They've got guys now. I'm not sure any of them are dominant. Like, Stevenson was dominant. We'll see. He certainly could be. If he's anything like he was last year, Stevenson's is tremendous. I don't love their bullpen that much. I don't think it's a top 10 bullpen in baseball.
Rob, you clearly had an influence in me over the years, because like I have this part of my brain now that and literally your voice comes into my brain.
Jesus, I'm sorry. My nasally, Canadian voice is in your brain.
And then I go through the process of what I'm about to look at in your voice too. I mean, it's really fascinating. But no, it's clearly.
Should I start sending rent invoices each month as I live in your brain?
Oh God, no! But it's a nod to, though, like how you've gotten me to think about a lot of things, like the probabilistically and historically, like things that like I used to go to, but not think about them maybe as much as I should have. And you know, I see this 31-year-old relief pitcher with 3 career saves. You know, and it's like historically, guys who are 31 entering a season with 3 career saves don't end up being guys who log a lot of saves going forward. One exception recently is Ryan Pressly. So you can make a case that he could be the next Ryan Pressly, sure. But the list of the other guys who have done this since 1990 is not a lot. And it's not very recent that a lot of them have happened. So I just think that in that end, to me, there's a lot of risk in Stevenson. Also, too, with the actual pitch success, he's got this cutter, slider, however you want to dub it. Lance Brodowski called it one thing. The team and everyone else called it something else. Who knows? Sliders, cutters, bullet slider, gyros. Who knows? There's a classification issue that regardless though, this pitch, if it's a cutter, gets, you know, 39-40% swing and strike rate on it when the league average is like 12-13%. So yeah, what if that pitch regresses a little bit? Or what if, like you said, he goes out of the Rays organization and he's just not as good? He's also been on 4 teams since the end of 2022, since the All-Star break of 2022. He's been on 4 teams. And you could say, oh, yeah, a lot of change over 35 innings. He was the dominant reliever over 35 to 40 innings. And again, I'll go back to your thinking, like, probabilistically, what's the chances that he remains this dominant? And that's where my reluctance to even pick him where Jose Leclerc goes is there. Because Jose Leclerc, like, closed out games in the World Series and the postseason, and they didn't get Hader. So that's why I feel more confident in maybe some other plays, and definitely not where if he's going to be in the Kimbrel range, I would most likely go to a guy who's got almost a career leader in saves, you know, instead. So that's where my hesitancy toward Stevenson is. I acknowledge how good he was last year, 1,000%. But in this game of like where to take risk, I'm not taking my risk with Stevenson that early, you know?
I would just also point out with your Presley analogy, because it's a really interesting one. Presley got traded to Houston from Minnesota midseason. First season, it was shithead Roberto Osuna who was getting all the saves. Second season, it was for the first half of the year, shithead Roberto Osuna who was getting the saves. It was only when Osuna was done that Presley was the next man up. So right. It's not like Houston went out and traded for or like aggressively said, you've been an awesome middle reliever, which Presley was. You're now going to be the closer. It's we need an awesome setup guy. And when our closer like was a shithead and got hurt, two separate thoughts, you'll inherit the job. So while it's a good analogy, I don't think it's what the Stevenson investors want to hear in terms of how that worked out.
No, that's true. Yeah. And yeah, I remember that year, Ryan Presley, that was my speculate and wait. And that spurred me to the overall champs because, took him and Matt Barnes back to back rounds and Barnes took it from Brandon Workman, I believe. Draft skills, not role, they said. Mm-hmm. It worked out one time. all right, Mr. Rhys Hoskins finally finds his team, not with the speculated Cubs, as many assumed. He goes over to the Milwaukee Brewers, who definitely had a some sort of need for first base / DH. Jeff, how do you find Rhys Hoskins' value this season? Do you feel like he's definitely safe to, you know, draft him because of his recent ACL reconstruction?
I think you just have to assume he's going to be healthy for right now. And all reports point to that. It's if we get to spring training and he's not playing games, then I'm going to start throwing up some red flags. Like he needs to come out and show that he can be out in the field, or if they're just DHing him all the time, I'll have a little bit of a worry. The Brewers are kind of interesting on how they're going to – I mean, Jake Bauer's value got killed, and anyone that thought Jake Bauer's was the answer should have their head examined. Like, that's – I think he was the one that's like, okay, we have him out here. If prices get ridiculous, we'll go with him. But you tell the Brewers didn't really want to. It might hurt Tyler Black. There was some talk of him actually playing first base. So now he's going to have to play third possibly right away. And it may actually boost his value. The Monasterio, him at second or Terang might be an interesting one. Both of them are projected to be the same talent of players. So whoever might win that job, it might have a 50-50 shot there. But I think Hoskins is, like I said, you're just going to have to assume that he's healthy and go with it. If it's not, I mean, that's people have been taking a discount already, but I expect he'll jump up quite a bit. I'm guessing Rob has probably looked at the ADP and see where he's at. But he's, like I said, I liked him going into last year. It's just sometimes these injuries happen, so I don't have a problem drafting him.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be very interesting how his ADP. There's only, as far as I can tell, there's only been one online championship, which apparently was Phil Dussault's championship qualifier one yesterday. And Rhys only went 185 in that. So I don't know if people just didn't make the adjustment. I don't know if the 12 team changes the dynamic of his value. That seems really late for him with a job, even despite he was a guy that. Like my comments last week or 2 weeks ago, there really shouldn't have been a discount. Like that he was going to sign was not really in doubt. Like Joey Votto, I get that there's a percentage chance Joey Votto just it's musical chairs and the music stops playing and there's no job for Joey Votto. I get that. Rhys Hoskins is too young still and too good. And the surgery was long enough ago that while you never know, like I don't know how big a risk he really is. So like Steamer certainly has him, and it's 656 plate appearances, which is assuming a ton of health, but Steamer has him as a top 65 hitter. So like there's a lot of room between an ADP of 180 and that. So yeah, like he becomes another really interesting kind of, along with Jorge Soler, Marcell Ozuna, some of the guys we've talked about in the ADP review already. If you need power and a meh batting average, like it's not Joey Gallo, obviously. It's not a batting average that's going to kill you. It's not going to help you. There's no speed that's coming back anymore with Rhys Hoskins. But in Milwaukee, he should be able to hit some big boy bombs if he's healthy. So, and he should be hitting third, fourth in that lineup every day. So, and again, you never like to, I never like to appeal to authority, though I do it all the time. In a Milwaukee team that is cutting money for whatever reasons, Milwaukee's cutting money, this is not a small contract for them to give out. It's not a ton of money, but it's not a nothing contract for Milwaukee. So I think they think he's healthy and that this is a good deal for him. Or they would have just waited and gotten like JD Martinez for 1 year cheaper. Like, so they clearly decided this is our price and we're going to go. So if Rhys Hoskins doesn't jump up another 40 picks into like round 10 ish, he becomes a really nice buy, I think.
100%. Yeah. And I think the first thing that jumped out for me when I was starting my, just doing some player analysis, and I went to his Fangraphs page to reach it out to that he never had a lower than 112 WRC plus, career 126. Like, that's a pretty good baseball player.
He may be Milwaukee's best hitter this, like, just like period, full stop. Like, I love, like, Contreras, like he is very good for them. Like, yes. In real baseball terms, if he's healthy, he makes them, I don't know that he makes them good, but he makes them much better.
Yes, agreed. And I don't know if ATC hasn't updated it, his transaction yet. But
just look at Steamer. It's the same thing.
I know. okay, so he jumps up and, like, you're taking him ahead.
What the hell was ATC? Steamer didn't even have that plate appearances. Who had him hit? Where's he pulling the?
I assume CBS had it for 7 more plate appearances, and the 2% that ATC is giving to CBS pushed him up. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's
544. No, it's 115 games. Where the hell was he playing 115 games at?
Somebody 115 games and 90 less plate appearances on ATC. It's the interprotectional skew. What do you? So let's just say he enters that 10th round area, or at least next to your Yandy Diaz, CES, Spencer Torkelson. He better than those guys for you, or that becomes more of an interesting choice if you need a first baseman there? Bob
or Jeff, do you want to go first?
Jeff,
I would say the one thing is I may wait for first baseman. Like, that might be a good place to pick the last one, because probably one's going to fall. It's also like, with Yandy, it's a different profile. Like, he's going to give you more, better batting average. So you might have to kind of pick and choose there. But it's one where it's like, you just kind of circle, I'm going to get one of these guys. They look like a deal. I could see him even falling, where people are like, okay, there's plenty of first baseman here. I'm going to get something else.
Right.
And as everything else gets pushed up, these first basemen fall down and become a better deal.
That's a good point. Like waiting, like people say, oh, well, there's Vinny P and Hoskins and Lowe and Paredes later. So, like, maybe those guys do fall. That's a good point. I like that.
I see so I agree with that. Like, he's not much better enough to be jumping him if that's what you have to do. I do see him more, to me, it's more of a category as opposed to position type of analysis. So Zuna is now going a fair bit earlier in a lot of drafts. I think he's moved up since we talked about Ozuna in the 160s, well into the like 130s in some drafts. Soler, I think, is going to jump up when he signs. Again, it makes no sense, but he just will. So I think I'd rather both of those players than Rhys, but it's more like, I need power here. I can manage the batting average. So where does he slot in terms of that skill set, more than just position, for me?
Mm-hmm. And recent news here, sorry, just Christian Arroyo gets a non-roster invitation from the Brewers. That means our boy Phil Dussault is going to be right back in with Christian Arroyo.
MVP Arroyo.
MVP Arroyo. Okay, let's move to Aroldis Chapman signed a one-year deal with the Pittsburgh Pirates. David Bednar, one of the better, you know, closers out there from last season. Tremendous skill set. Jeff, how do you see Chapman fitting in with the Pirates? And do you think they will get Cole Reagan's midseason like the Royals did?
That's exactly what the Pirates are thinking. Like, yeah. There's no other thought process, but we're going to trade him. And it's not even – I mean, Reagan's was just – crazy that you got them at the Royals ended up with him, but it's you add Chapman, someone else doesn't want to deal with him for 4 months. You have to babysit him and then he becomes tradable. Then, like, I think they'll keep him in some kind of high leverage spot. They may not have him as the closer. But that this is all it is. Maybe he'll get some saves. I actually haven't read up too much on it. Not a lot has come out with the Pirates. But I usually, like, you'll start getting some more information later, but it does, I think it, God, I don't know. The one thing it says is if Bednar, I guess, kind of falters, they may put Chapman there, would be the only thing. But I'm pretty sure it's Bednar's job until that happens.
Yeah, if there's a discount on Bednar because of Aroldis Chapman, then by all the Bednars you possibly can. I think this is 1,000% Pittsburgh saying we may not quite do what the Royals did, but how much is two pretty good prospects worth? It's worth 2 months of a $10 million, 3 months of a $10 million. So we have to pay $5 million. Of Aroldis Chapman. You got $10 million, you said, Rob, yeah. I think. Mm-hmm. So we have to pay, let's say, $5 million for the first 3 months of Chapman. And then we can get, we're quite confident if he stays healthy, X for him. It is worth $5 million for us. And it's not even $5 million because if we didn't have Aroldis Chapman, the counterfactual would be a reliever making $1 million for 3 months. So it's a $4 million investment for us to be able to trade him and get this in return. And I think the calculus is no more complicated than that. Obviously, if Bednar got hurt, then Chapman's there. I don't think he gets more than a handful of saves, you know, 4 or 5 saves on days when Bednar's pitched back-to-back days, kind of thing. The odds of Pittsburgh winning a lot of 3 games in a row and needing the third day closer is relatively low. So I don't know how many of those days there'll be. I will say, and I know you call me Mr. Steamer there, Rob, and a little cheap shot the other day. Steamer has Aroldis friggin' Chapman in the year 2024 for the 4th highest strikeout percentage of any pitcher in baseball. Now, they project hurt guys. So they have Felix Bautista for a 36.8% strikeout rate, Edwin Diaz, 36.7, Jacob DeGrom, 35.5, and Aroldis Chapman, 35.5. But it's not just that. His strikeout minus walk rate is the 12th best strikeout minus walk rate that Steamer has projected for any pitcher. So certainly Steamer still thinks that Aroldis Chapman has the potential to be just a dominant reliever, which seems weird to me. Like, it doesn't feel like that's who Aroldis Chapman still is, but that's what Steamer still thinks of him as. But I don't think he'll get more than a handful of saves.
Yeah, I would agree with more than the handful of saves. I mean, they do now have actually someone that they can, you know, give a break to Bednar if he does need it before the options are definitely weren't great. But like you said, if there's any slip on Bednar and his 58 saves with a 30.6 K rate in the last 2 seasons, we'll definitely take that. Chapman, you know, 103 strikeouts last season is most since 2015. Came with a 41% K rate. It was his walk rate was 14.5%, but it still resulted in a 27% came on his walk. It's pretty incredible.
Wild.
It really is wild. It's also really wild because, like, we saw him at the end of 22. He talked about broken people. He was a broken man. He sucked. He couldn't throw gas anymore. He was skipping team events to go get tattoos on his legs. He just was like, all right, I give up. And but really, like, you know, kind of had this, gave us this refound confidence in him last year. He was definitely a guy too that was very, he, in an online championship league, where like in a 15 team league, he was always owned and people were like, no, I'm not going to get rid of him. I'm going to put him in for strikeouts and maybe get some save. And in a 12 team league, he was always on the wire here and there. And it was always like, man, well, if he just get a spot to save and he just get a couple saves here and there, what if he takes it over the clerk? He never really ran with it for Texas, but I'm, you know, I'm shocked that he didn't go to a place where he just becomes the guy. Cause I think he still has those skills to be a closer. So, but interesting sign. Yeah.
I'm guessing Pittsburgh was only gave him $10 million and he was only looking at the zeros.
Yep.
Yep. Gotcha.
I'm about 99.9% sure that was the decision, was where can I get the most money?
Yes. Yes. All right, who's got next? James Paxton going to the Dodgers, as to their very formidable glass staff. Very, very talented rotation there, no doubt. But this kind of brings out, I guess, more of that six-man-ish rotation talk and all that. But I guess, how do you feel about Paxton, Jeff? I think we already talked about Paxton in some light, but do you think this affects the bottom end of the Los Angeles Dodgers pitching pool any bit?
Yeah, from what I've been doing when reading, mining the news, there's just a lot of talk that they're going to go. They haven't decided if it's going to be a six-man rotation or a six-day. Like last year, the Angels did 6 day. They just made sure there was next day of rest, and sometimes, like some weeks, like when you skip a start, there are six starts and everyone's fine. But I don't know for sure what they're going to do, but it makes the most sense. They're going to slow start Buehler to begin with. Glasnow is always going to be hurt. Yamamoto's used to going once a week. Paxton's always hurt. I think that there's going to be, yeah, like I said, I don't know if it's just going to be six man or if they're just going to make sure to get everyone a break, but I think that's what's going through. And Paxton, if healthy, is good. He's always been that way. So he's definitely a draft in like OC's redraft leagues, but at some point, you know, you're probably just going to have to drop him when he goes on the IL. So like I said, he's a nice little target. He's just someone you just can't count on.
He got, you know, like a 340, 350-ish ADP in draft champions. He just recently went 256 in one of my drafts. How high do you think he's going to rise, Jeff? And how high would you say, yeah, that's a good spot for him?
Dude, I could almost see him go like Springs and Rasmussen, like where he's in the first 10 rounds, six.
Wow.
Here we go, Jeff.
The Dodgers fix everyone. Players are going to get hurt. If he's healthy,
let's go, yeah, baby.
It's. I hope that somewhere Noah Syndergaard is listening to this podcast and hears the words "the Dodgers fix everyone," and he's like, his face is against the glass, saying, "What did I do wrong? They didn't fix me."
I don't think they have to fix him at all.
Yeah. No, right. James Paxton does not. The difference between, jokes aside, the difference between Noah Syndergaard and James Paxton is Noah Syndergaard was broken in terms of skill. Right. And people last year at this time were like, well, if the Dodgers see something, then surely like driveline plus the Dodgers, that's a magic recipe.
Ooh.
And it turns out it was not a recipe for anything.
It's more like the Dodgers are good and going to get him wins. They have a good bullpen.
There's no real reason to think that the Dodgers have a magic, we keep all our starting pitchers healthy power. So they like him for the same reasons we like him for fantasy, which is if we get 10 starts out of him, they should be 10 good starts. If we get 20 good starts out of him, should be 20 good starts. The Dodgers would say, I would think, we have no idea how many starts. We're going to try to keep him healthy. We think we can keep him healthy, but we don't know. So let's go with it and see how it all goes. And that's, I think, what their honest truth would be.
Yep. Yeah.
What I'll say is, I'd be willing to bet the Dodgers will have 35 games started by pitchers who are not one of their six starting pitchers right now. and I don't even mean like Kershaw. I mean like just the way this goes every year, not every year. Last year was sort of weird for the Dodgers. Most years, what we are saying at this point of the season is, how are the Dodgers going to get starts for all these guys? Like, how is this going to work? And then they're calling up guys from Double A you've never heard. Well, maybe you've heard of them, Rob, but I've never heard of before to make six starts. That'll happen again this year. These guys will not make it through. They will need more starting pitchers than this, not less starting pitchers than this. So this will work out.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, you know, Emmett Sheehan is one of my most rostered players.
I've heard.
In draft champions this season. And like immediately I'm like, oh, but you know, the way I was thinking about it too, not only because of the injuries and the Yamamoto schedule, it's like if there is a six man or a sick day, and that's constantly the thing, that I feel a little bit better that he should be a part of that more than if it's a strict five man and it becomes like, well, then what if this guy doesn't perform and he's down or he's just not pitching out of the top five pitchers? So I don't know. I'm trying to spin it as best as I can.
I think the best thing that could happen heading into March draft season, if you believe fully in Sheehan, and there's lots of reasons to believe in him, is that the roster resource five-man rotation becomes sacrosanct and people just think Sheehan's starting in AAA. And so he's free or close to free in redraft leagues, because I don't want to draft like a AAA pitcher, because A, I don't think this is right. And B, the odds of one of Paxton Buehler, Glasnow, Miller being injured in like the first 3 weeks of the season is extraordinarily high. So Sheehan becomes a really nice pick if his ADP goes down even more. So in some ways, I'd be cheering for that to become conventional wisdom if I were you, Rob.
Well, the one thing that's going to be news, like they've already put it out, is how much of a break they're giving Buehler. Like, he's not going to start the season. Like, so there's going to, Sheehan's probably in it right now.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, that's, like, once people figure that out, it's going to go up.
Walker Buehler's ADP is like, is another one of these mysteries. I don't understand what they're doing.
It's really super high. Get picked in the fourth round of that online championship, I believe.
Yeah, like the last seven DCs, he's 117. So he's being drafted like an ace. And I don't think that between health and people forget, like, there was a lot of Alek Manoah to Buehler's like actual underlying skills. And that sounds really harsh and unfair, but there were reasons. And now you can look back and saying, well, maybe he was pitching hurt for parts of it, but his results were like his surface stats were wildly outperforming his underlying metrics for a long time. So yeah, it's the Dodgers, and yeah, they're going to be awesome, but there's a lot of things that could go wrong with Walker Buehler, and to earn eighth round value to get the volume and the results, a lot of things are going to have to go right for him, which of course they can, but I just don't think it's a great bet right now. Anyways, that's neither here nor there.
Okay, let's do a quick one on Joey Gallo. Guy, just, we're talking about a cleanup hitter on the Washington Nationals in a park that really benefits lefty hitters. I mean, this, we got to be all over him now, no, Jeff?
That, in my OBP league.
The OBP and barrel
league? The OBP barrel league. Yes. Man, is he a sixth-round pick now in the OBP barrel league, Jeff?
It might be. Average league? God, no. I don't want that guy anywhere near my lineup. I'll figure something else out. The so many other choices than Joey Gallo. I don't – nothing – when projections have you at a sub-200 average, projections, you know, like it can be even worse than that. Like, hell no. It's just –
What's incredible to me is so Joey Gallo, again, I stop making fun of me for referring to Steamer. I just like referring to projections because it grounds things in facts. So Joey Gallo right now, his Steamer has for a 96 WRC plus, which makes a certain logic. Like, he's basically an average hitter. What's incredible about the Washington lineup is, with a bit of luck, he could easily be their best hitter this year. Like, Washington right now has Kubert Ruiz, who's projected for a 105, Luis Garcia, a 102, Joey Meneses, who I didn't fully appreciate just how awful Joey was last year in real baseball terms. They gave him 650 plate appearances. He had negative WAR for the season. Like, that's not, it's not unprecedented. Players do this from time to time. It's not easy to get that much playing time and be a negative player. That's not like just replacement value. He hurt them in 650 plate appearances. It's a really bad team. And on the one hand, like, I like when bad teams spend a bit of money to try to become a little bit less bad, but it's just not great for the state of a franchise when you're still rolling out Victor Robles at this point and you don't have a single like interesting young outfielder that you're like, we just would rather give 600 plate appearances and see what we have with, you know, Fred over here. So you have to call Joey Gallo because, you know, Joey Gallo has no trade value. Like there's nobody who it's not Aroldis Chapman, where you can say, look, if he just does well for a couple of months, maybe we can flip him. Like, you're cutting Joey Gallo in a couple of months. You're not flipping him to a team who says, we need some power. Let's go get Joey Gallo. I don't think even if Joey Gallo in April hits 12 home runs and is somehow hitting 350, I don't think a Major League Baseball team says, they fixed Joey Gallo. We want to get him now. I just don't think that happens. So, yeah, it's what a waste.
But it was supposed to be Rob that he just couldn't handle New York. When he escaped New York, he was just going to get back to being Joey Gallo.
Yeah. Joey Gallo can't handle a bunch of things. And it's interesting because we're all, like, in real baseball terms, sabermetrically inclined. So we'd all be from the Tom Tango, like, batting average doesn't matter. Batting average is irrelevant. Stop looking at batting average. And that's true to a point. If you're a consistent 160 batting average, you can't not look at batting average. Like, your eye is just drawn to it. And at a certain point, you have to look at the batting average.
Yes. Yeah, you really do. Your eyes are definitely drawn to it, for sure. All right, one quick hit on Mr. John Brebbia, signed with the Chicago White Sox and maybe got a chance to be the closer. You have Gregory Santos as kind of the incumbent remaining guy there, coming off a bicep injury to end his season. Gives him a veteran 33-year-old that can maybe close out some games he has in his career, some saves. One thing too that really always throws me off is a little bit of a side thing, but on Fangraphs, sometimes when I go to the pitcher page and you see the bat's throws and you see the LR, sometimes my brain doesn't look at it and sees LR and I'm like, oh, he's a lefty, you know. It's just, I gotta take the batting away.
There's no doubt, Jeff, like, none of us care how these pitchers, which side of the plate these pitchers you never are gonna hit from anymore. They really do need to remove that from the Fangraphs page.
Yeah. It's so stupid. It's such a stupid request with all the other things going on in this world. But it's like, it always catches my eye.
Let me ask. Ohtani probably screwed us up on that.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so this was actually one of those situations where he got signed and I was in round 47 round of, and it was on the clock and I was like, oh, look at this, I'm gonna take a shot at John Brebbia here. It wasn't draining the clock, it just happened to happen pretty much right when I got on the clock. I'm like, this is amazing. I didn't even do much research behind it. I said, okay, yeah, he's got to be a decent shot at getting 5 to 7 saves from this spot, and that's really all you need from a round 47 pick like Jason Foley from me last year. You just need a stretch where he gets 7 saves to plug into your already 40 or 50 and you're happy with that pick. So Jeff, you think he had any shot to be the closer?
Shit, you got a shot to be the closer in the White Sox. That's so bad. Like, I don't know what the hell they're doing. It's like they pick up the Royals rejects. Like, what is your, how do you plan on winning doing that?
The Royal Reject. That's a good name.
God. I guess. Yeah. Like, he's got both of his career saves. He's sort of done some high leverage stuff. It's just bad.
Like, the bad team. How many opportunities, stuff like that. Yeah.
We'll have to see what they think. I think they're hoping with Santos, but I guess it's one of those ones where we'll kind of see, and he's what you're like in an OC or whatever, your 29th round pick, and just be like, is he the closer? Nope. All right. Yeah. Give me someone else.
Ditch it real quick. Yep. That's a solid point right there. All right. You want to, let's hit some ADP talk before we get out of here. Maybe we can go through a couple of players. Let's start off with Mr. Mitch Garver. Did we hit Mitch Garver yet? I'm not exactly sure.
I don't think we've talked about Mitch Garver yet.
Good old Mitchy Garver going over to Seattle. Cal Raleigh plays like 90% of their game. So probably assuming that he's going to slot into a DH role, moves into a park that's a little less favorable than we probably wanted to. But Jeff, he's going off the board right now in the last 12 this season, pick 185, as early as 159. What's your thoughts about Mitch Garver going into 2024?
I think he's fine. I think we've kind of talked about this whole area kind of being the catcher zone. I think he went to a nice spot where, for now, this is kind of the only issue with him is he's looks to be the full-time DH and possibly get some games at catcher, maybe not even. So, like, as things stand, and it's Seattle, so who knows what could change, full-time DH from your catcher, sign me up. I'm just kind of still a little surprised he's down here. Jonah Heim and Cabert Reeves, like, he maybe should move up with them. Mm-hmm. We have some other ones here that maybe he's the last one. Luis Camposano is also goes right around here. We might get to him today. But Garver is like the one. His batting average may be a drain. But it's usually for a catcher, it's probably not actually above average. So I think between the power, probably 25 home run power, and probably like a 245 average, I think he's just kind of a nice buy here. Like, maybe if you're looking for a little bit more batting average, you can get Camposano, but Garver's, he's fine right here.
So much of projecting these catchers this year is making assumptions on playing time. Mm. We talked about that with your boy, Logan Hoppe, and that's certainly true with Mitch Garver. If you assume that he is the full-time DH, Steamer or Fangraphs has him for 525 plate appearances, then he's a real nice buy here. And you, of course, you'll love him here. I'd point out he's never hit 400 plate appearances, and he's 33 this year, which doesn't mean he can't stay healthy and DH full-time. I also would not be surprised if Seattle like goes into the discount bin with whoever the last like of the DH bats standing is and brings in a left-handed bat, and suddenly Mitch Garver goes from 500 plate appearances to 300 plate appearances. And that's what I mean by the playing time assumption is such an important swing for this. We kind of know who Garver is from a skill perspective, and I'm not saying he isn't good enough to DH full-time, but I just have a tough time buying that he will. So we'll see. I need to know what their final roster looks like. And I don't right now because I don't think it's done.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, I really liked him last year. I had him, you know, he was that util entering the season last year. You had to wait until he got catcher eligibility. I drafted around that in my draft champions. He was a nice little add at the price point. He was going with like 475, 500 ADP. That's, the plate appearances are really troublesome because you could create a narrative to say, oh yeah, but he won't get hurt now because he's DHing. But who's to say he doesn't get hurt when he swings? You know, like, that's, people get hurt when they swing or run. That's, those are real things too. It doesn't have to be an injury from behind the plate. I don't know. Again, like, I think you nailed it, Rob, you know, with the plate appearance thing. When, if you could play a fun game and give both Mitch Garver and Gary Sanchez 350 plate appearances, what's the difference? 20 points in batting average? You're still getting about 18 to 20 home runs, probably. The same thing. So why not? And this is not that, you know, stupid play on why take this guy here when you can get him there? I know Gary Sanchez doesn't have a team. That's fine. But he's eclipsed plate appearance levels that Garver has not even sniffed yet. And to me, I'd just rather wait on that kind of profile. He smashes the ball, but he's also got some metrics that are not really going the, like, upwards. They're kind of already on the way down, but still stable enough to hit some power. But yeah, I'm not with it right here. I think they'd just rather go elsewhere with the catcher position being so loaded right here. Next guy up, Jose Leclerc, Texas Rangers, going 190 in the last 12 this season, as early as 166, as late as 218. Jeff, what's your thought on Mr. Leclerc?
This is where he'll need to go. He'll probably go earlier, as we talked about earlier. The kind of the closer market is kind of cleared up. Like there was definitely some chances for him to lose his job. The one thing is he kind of has very fly ball prone and very walk prone. So he'll have the years where he has like the 4-5 ERA or years where the ball doesn't go out and just with some good left on base percentage, he puts up the 2-5 ERA. I mean, his xFIP and like I said, they're kind of all over the place, and that's just kind of who he is. So there is some variation to him. The one thing is in draft and holds, I would be grabbing, what's it, Spores?
The Boars, yeah.
Josh,
yeah.
Spores. Mm-hmm. Spores. He's definitely kind of, you have to have roster him at this point. I think almost even probably in 15 teamers just to see if Leclerc, how he comes out. And I could see the Leclerc just struggling a bit and Spores look great in the playoffs. So the Rangers could just go to him. I kind of thought they would add another arm, and they still might. Maybe even a couple of them, maybe possibly even in a trade. I'm not sure they're done right now because their bullpen isn't the best, but they also may move over some starters there that they've got some guys in the minors that look good that might be when it comes to like playoff time or if they're getting to the end that they may do that. But it's kind of a weak bullpen.
It is a weak bullpen, but I think that's the strongest argument in favor of Jose Leclerc. I mean, I think Rob's argument that he closed World Series games and it's weird to just drop a guy from the closer role who has done nothing wrong. I mean, Jeff, put on earmuffs. He's thrown 100 innings, 104 innings the last two seasons and has like a 2.7 ERA the last two seasons, 2.83, 2.68. I know previous year ERA is useless in terms of projecting next year ERA, but when you have a weak bullpen and a guy who's pitched really well for two consecutive seasons in relatively high volume, like 104 innings over two seasons for a reliever is not nothing. I think he's got a fair bit of rope. It's interesting to me that in addition to the ERA, he's got a 1.13 whip and a 1.14 whip the last two seasons, which is obviously quite good for a non-elite closer. And I don't think even you would say, Rob, that he's an elite closer. He walks too many guys. Right. And yet the projections see, for totally understandable reasons, the BABIP regressing back up and the ER and the whips exploding to 1.3. You don't love that from your closers. You need the saves. But you don't, like, there's such a big difference in value between the closers who help you in the ratios and the relievers who hurt you in the ratios. Leclerc, from a projections perspective, is hurting you in whip and ERA. But I think in terms of rope, like, he's going to have to blow multiple saves, 4 or 5 saves before I think they go to one of the other guys. And at this point of the draft, that's what I think you're looking for. I know skills over role. Sometimes going with role and good enough skills is the right call, and that's kind of how I'd frame Leclerc. I think he has good enough skills to keep the job, and even if he doesn't make it through 6 full months, I think he could make it through many months of it and get you to, like how you talk, Rob, 20 saves, 25 saves, and you'll find your next 15, 20 other saves you may be missing from Leclerc as compared to an elite closer, because you're not paying an elite closer price here.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You're just piecing those stats together. I find that, you know, Jeff brought up the fly ball percentage, and it's 50% for his career, and it's wild that he's only allowed like 0.67 home run per nine. You know, he's kept that to, you know, not damaging himself. I think the biggest thing for me too last year was, you know, if you just go to the rolling average graph. You heard, you know, he came into the season with a neck injury. He said it was bothering him pretty much the whole, you know, the whole time up until when he started feeling comfortable. You could see it in the rolling average graph. You know, you could see that point where the four seamer went from, you know, being 94, 95 to 96, 97. And you could see how everything went with it. The zone contact, the O swing, the swing and strike. And you could see also too, he pivoted to throwing more sliders. So I feel like it's just like with a culmination of him being healthy, getting trust again in his stuff, and it played out, you know. And yeah, I do think that clearly he's the guy in this bullpen. And if I can get 20 saves from this spot in a draft champion or even in a fab league, I'm ecstatic at this point, because I think there's some guys in that 115 range, like the Alzolay Holmes, that are just going to get the same kind of volume, 20 to 22 saves, you know? So yeah, I really like Leclerc here. And every time I hear Josh Boris, or I say in my head, for some reason I go to the Seinfeld thing where it's like, the Moors and the Moops, and I just say spoop. I don't know why. That's where my brain goes with him. But all right, next guy, second baseman on the St. Louis Cardinals, Nolan Gorman, going to pick 190, as early as 168, as late as 217 in the last 12 draft champions. Jess, what's your thought on this young slugger from the Cardinals?
He just
learned new stretches too, Jeff. So you have to build that into at 23.
Oh, and a new diet, anti-inflammatory diet.
Well, that's stop, huge. Good for him stop, to finally doing that. But stretching? He didn't know stretching before that. Like, dude, you're an athlete. That's your body. You're an athlete. That's in your body, and you just learned stretching. Come on.
Well, the deal is he's had this back issue forever, and he don't know if it's. Yeah. And I don't know. It's where I'm just going to kind of avoid him, because it's one of those, it just kind of keeps, until it doesn't show up for a year, it's kind of like all these guys with plantar fasciitis, like, oh, it's gone. Like, we'll wait. We'll wait and see whenever it's gone and see if it doesn't bother you. And it just, most of them, it just keeps bothering him. He has some decent skills. He definitely has good home run power. He definitely has a good ability to strike out. It's a skill he's shown he seems to possess. I don't know if that's going to go away. So his batting average is always going to be a drain. The team sat him against quite a few lefties. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he deserves it from his minor league numbers. It was pretty bad. This whole time in the minors, he had over a 900 OPS against righties and almost a 600 against lefties. But in the majors, it's swapped, so he might have been able to solve that, but the team's still sitting him quite a bit.
Yep.
So I think I want more of a player I can count on at this point. He's definitely could be a gamble. Like, if he just stays healthy and just puts up a little bit of a batting average where he isn't such a drain, maybe 240, 245, he's going to have some speed. He's not really fast, but he's found a way to keep stealing bases. He kind of has that will to keep stealing. I think he could be a really good buy, but he could also just be a drag on your team and really not provide much, stick us and be a spot on the bench. So I think he's, for me, be one that I'd like to see him going a little bit later. And I just know that I'm going to need to drop him. At this point, I'm still trying to get like regulars for my roster, and I don't know if he's one.
After the All-Star break, started 9 of 13 versus lefty. So they definitely trusted him a little more later in the season. But that's, you know, a little bit promising. Sorry, Rob, get.
How could you dare interrupt me, Rob? of all things, people who interrupt are the worst. if you take Steamer 600, so that assumes health for everybody and takes that out of the equation. Nolan Gorman is the 57th best hitter. Right behind a guy named Starling Marte. So you're feeling like the difference is Nolan Gorman's like a baby. So he's young and could improve even over this. Are you feeling lucky or not? It's interesting. The projections don't think that he's that bad against lefties. Steamer has him for like a 700 OPS against lefties, which compared to lots of people, we try to rationalize as they should really be playing him for a left-handed batter. A 700 projected OPS against lefties is just fine. I also think that the Cardinals lineup is an interesting group of moving pieces, but I am very down on Edmund's health. And while Edmund is projected to be an outfielder more than a second baseman, at a certain point, because of their moving pieces, if I'm right and Edmund's not going to play much this year because of his injuries, then they really need Gorman to be playing a fair bit, which doesn't mean that his back gives a shit what the Cardinals need. But if the Cardinals could have a great lineup. The Cardinals lineup could be hot garbage. Like, it's really a big, interesting lineup, that Cardinals lineup, to me, because if Arenado and Goldie bounce back and people stay healthy, it's a deep, good lineup, like a bunch of really good above average hitters. And on the other hand, it could be terrible.
It really can. It has so much swing to it. Like you mentioned, the Edmund, and you got Brendan Donovan who's coming off a flexor tendon injury, you know, to his left arm. So it's not a throwing thing for him. But yeah, it's because I look at Gorman's skills, and I mean, part of me wants to smash the draft button most of the time because he's just really solid. Like, he doesn't, really hard to see like a lot of sluggers who like don't chase out of the zone, make decent contact in the zone, and pummel a ball like he does. And he's young, you know, and he's making gains, like you said, Jeff, versus lefties this past season in the majors. He definitely showed he can handle it. It's obviously a small sample. But just like the injuries are, I think, the only thing that are stopping me from always like wanting to draft him in this range, because skill wise, he seems to have it. And I like, me personally, you know, I'm always falling short on power. So a lot of, like, in these last 2 years, so a guy like him appeals to me in that sense, where I'm like, okay, hopefully I got my stolen bases in line and average set to where I want, that I can take this on. But man, I just always go to it because of that injury concern. Like you said, it's a back injury. He's had multiple injections last season for it. So, and he's had it since, he said, with the COVID year, deadlifting. So it's just something that he's been dealing with, and it hasn't gone away. And that's definitely not great. And obviously you could back yourself up in a draft champions with some good reserves and swap him in and out of your lineup. But there was a lot of times last year where it was an annoying lineup set for him, because it was like, oh yeah, he feels good, he's taking part in drills, and it's like, it looks like he's gonna start. He starts the Friday, sits the next 2 days because he doesn't feel well. And that's just, it's hard to capture all the stats like that from him.
But if he's healthy in spring training, does that give you more confidence to draft him? Or is it because of the nature of back injuries, where you're, as you know better than anybody, you're good until you're not good, but you're 100%. Not cured. You're not cured of the back injury.
No, you're not cured of it. And that's the thing. It's like, he could look great, feel great. And yeah, it's just because he's been rested for 5-6 months and training to be the best he can be on opening day. And then it's just, you know, you could go tie your shoe and you sneeze, and that just triggers, you know, your back to spasm. So many things can trigger that. But I mean, skills wise, I really like him right here. I think he's a really solid player. I'm wondering too, like, is there any workload concerns on the Cardinals end, and are they gonna try to workload a 24-year-old, which is really crazy to say, but Jordan Walker is huge now, 260. Can he play the outfield? Is he half a DH? Does Brendan Donovan half a DH? You know, too, like you said, Edmonds may be missing some time, but like, how does the rest of it fall in line? I'd also just point out,
because we're not going to get to him today, because I have to go do some deadlifting. Brandon Nimmo was an injured player until he's not, right? Yes, like, we're really bad. And I know the nature of back injuries. Not all injuries are the same, blah, blah, blah. But it's an annual reminder. Like, players cannot stay on the field until they have, like, 1,500 plate appearances over two seasons, like Brandon Nimmo. And now Brandon Nimmo is one of the safest volume hitters you could possibly draft. Dude could not stay healthy. Season after season. That's not necessarily a pro Gorman argument. It's just a reminder. We're really shitty at knowing what's going to happen in terms of injuries, except with Byron Buxton.
You're right. And I know, I think that's a very good thing to bring up, because I try to keep that optimism, you know, and I think, just to take a different sport, I think I talk about a lot this and on my podcast on the Patreon, but to take a different sport, like Steph Curry had chronic ankle injuries where everyone's like, he's not gonna make it, he's not gonna, and he trained his body, he knew he had to do something different, and he did. He totally dedicated his concern to, like, I have to stay on the floor. And whether, again, everybody's body's different, we all know this, people can do that. People can dedicate themselves to, you know, not get hurt, as much as control it as much as they can. Obviously there's always nature of injuries that we can't control, but yeah, that's a good point. Do you have time for another one, Rob?
One more player.
One more player. Luis Camposano, E-Rod. Who do you guys want to cover? Pick the next guy on this list.
Shane Baz.
Shane Baz, the Tampa Bay Rays, 194 ADP as early as 160, as late as 246. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Shane Baz?
Take him, Rob. You're the one that wanted him so bad.
I was actually more curious what you guys think. I think on a per inning basis, we've forgotten just how elite he's going to be. And I think that it really depends on your philosophy and approach to building a pitching staff. I have no idea if he's going to fully ready to start the season. Jeff's done and others have done research of players coming off of surgery, and sometimes, especially on control, it takes a little bit while for the stuff to fully be back. But he's coming from such a high place in terms of how good he was going to be and should be, that 100 innings of him could be spectacular, even if you have to cut him after that, when they shut him down or when they slow play him or whatever. And sort of like the Dodgers with James Paxton, it's like, get what you can get when you get it, and then it'll be gone. And I can hear Jeff already saying, well, then just draft James Paxton. I just think Shane Baz's ceiling as a per inning basis is like a top 15, top 20 pitcher, which is higher than a lot of other guys. So while I'm not a, therefore I'm going to be having Baz on every, it's Baz, not Baz, right? Baz.
I like Baz. It sounds cool.
Baz? Okay. Baz.
Baz.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like Baz.
You're
thinking the Bosworth.
There's huge risk. There's huge downside. There's huge range of outcomes. Even if I accept, like, he's not going to pitch more than 130 innings. So I know there's a ceiling to that. I think he has the potential to be spectacular. And I think he's the potential going into next season to be like everybody wants him. And he's going in the third, fourth round because he's the man. And now they're going to stretch him out to 170 innings. And it's going to be spectacular. And he's Tyler Glass now.
B-A-H-Z is the pronunciation. B-A-H-Z, Baz.
Isn't that what I was saying, or was I saying Baz?
Yeah.
Baz. Yeah, I was right. Nailed it. I do my research. Nailed I don't show it. Up and just Fucking say shit it. On this podcast.
Amen.
I think the biggest thing is just to watch how long he's going in spring training. Not so much even the strikeout numbers. Like, how many pitches are they getting? Is he getting fully stretched out? The other thing is, he was – the year when he got hurt, the velocity was definitely down. Performance wasn't as great as like when he first came up that first year. I think there's a little bit to watch with that. I think that'll probably be, it's probably something you don't need to check on. I'm pretty sure like 18 different people the first time he throws, you probably follow this guy called Nick Pollock, and he'll yeah, exactly. You'll have to look him up, but he'll probably have like, you know, a 3-hour breakdown of his one inning debut to let us all know what's happening. But yeah, we just want to see him back and pitching again. And I think that with the velocity and how much they baby him, I kind of worried that to start the season, you may get a lot of 3-4 inning starts from Baz here, Baz. And he'll have to, you just won't have a chance with the wind. It's very Tampa Bay-ish. You still have to remember what team he's on. And it's like, are they going to baby him? Yeah, they're going to baby him. It's who they are. He might not even start. He might even follow someone else with them. Who knows?
Which would be great, because then he can get wins.
Right, exactly. You got to know what side he's on. Like, that's the key there. And but no, his ratio should be great. Like, I think in a draft and hold, he's perfect. It's like, oh, do I start? I don't care. I'm just going to get my good stats. I'll put him in as my, you know, I've got 2 closers, 6 starters, and we'll stick Baz in there, and he'll be good to go.
Yeah, I think I'm a little different from you guys. Like, I loved Baz in previous seasons. He's got that killer combo of electric slider or fastball that pumps high in his own and blows guys away. But I don't know about the length of games, like you said, Jeff, and just the amount that I'm going to get from him. We have no idea what we're really getting from him. He's just limited sample. I'm just not really going for it at this price range. 100 picks later, I'd be all over it. But I'm just the signing of Uwasawa also kind of like, you know, how much volume are these guys going to get? The Bradleys, the Pepios, the Bosses, and I don't know. I just feel like they have a plan here for us to really get underwhelmed by the amount of volume we see from him. So I'm off of him at this price, not at his skill level, because I think he is a fantastic pitcher and what he brings to the table. So
the one thing someone did bring up with the whole Rays bit is they may throw some of their innings early in the season to stay in it and just hope Rasmussen and Springs fill those innings later. It may not happen, but that was just something someone brought up, that like they may let some of their guys go use up their innings and maybe move to the bullpen just because they're hoping that those two guys will get back if they have to try to make the playoffs.
True. Playoff. Rob, later today you will be speaking for PitchCon, and man, it's going to be a battle for words with you, Mike Kurland, and John Lucchese. I mean, you guys might set the record for most words said in an hour ever in the history of fantasy baseball.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, I love it.
It's going to be great, and it's for a good cause. So, 100%.
Yep.
Looking forward to it.
Cool. All righty, guys. Anything else to say before we get out of here today?
Nope. Fun chatting, as always.
Fun chatting. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for everyone for listening to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. Catch you in a couple of weeks. Peace.